You are listening to BensTorah.com.
In the Sefer HaChinuch, in which he says, quite interesting, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which we have on the night of Pesach, which I discussed at length last week, of the halachic criteria of when we perform the mitzvah of Sipur, what the mitzvah of Zachar is, and exactly the halachic requirement of Pesach Matzah Marah being present at the actual time that the seid is done, whether it's there physically, or you have the flavorability of the eating still in your mouth, or still consider this if it's there. I gave you a very beautiful understanding of some of the technicalities that we apply to the seid when it comes to when it has to begin, when it has to end, the concept of chatzos, to be yotze all the shittas hatanayim. Today I want to deal with a much more pragmatic concept, and that is why hashkafically the mitzvah of Sipur Mitzrayim is so important, that not only do we go out of our way to prolong our discussion concerning it on the night of Pesach, but as I mentioned last week, that there's a mitzvah to be Zochu Yitzias Mitzrayim the entire year round. Every time we recite Kriya Shema, we recite three parshios. And in those three parshios, the purpose of the third parsha of Tzitzis is, besides mentioning the mitzvah Tzitzis, you have also in that specific parak a very short statement concerning the zechira of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So in order to be yotze the mitzvah by day and by night, to be zochi Yitzias Mitzrayim kol hashana kula, l'man tizkar, that we should be zochi Mitzrayim the entire year, we therefore recite the third parsha of Kriya Shema. By day it's understandable, by night it's also understandable, because there's a special mitzvah to do it by day, a special mitzvah to do it by night, and therefore zechira of Yitzias Mitzrayim is mentioned kol hashana kula. The whole year it's done in a very, very cryptic fashion. On the night of Pesach, we call it the mitzvah of not Zechiris Yitzias Mitzrayim, but the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. And if that's the case, that's what we basically do. If you look very carefully in the Sipur itself, I believe I quoted, or I should have quoted, the famous statement mentioned by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, that if you look in the Nusach of the Haggadah, you find that the Sipur itself is done in, basically speaking, three different perspectives. Number one is a concept of the halachic mandate that's mentioned initially, that we should be mesaper, and this should be a prolonged discussion, and an example of what was done by the great Chacham of antiquity, that they spent the whole night being mesaper, which was a beautiful, beautiful story, which we quote and mention in the actual Haggadah. We also know that in the Haggadah, Higada Levincha are very concerned that we gear the presentation of the Haggadah to all the types of children, all the types of different personalities that are at our Seder itself, to make sure they understand the language that we're using when it comes to explaining it to them. We have to use whatever is current in the language in the country we live. If they don't know Hebrew, we have to read the Hebrew text of the Haggadah and explain the basic concept in the Mamaloshin of the country you're living in. Like in America, we would explain it in English. In France, they would explain it in France. And just giving you an example. And then after you basically explaining them the meaning of the text, we basically try to gear how we would answer different personalities. Sometimes you'll have a Seder with a Zechacham. Sometimes you'll have a person who is a Tam, a person in a day of Lishol. Sometimes you'll have a person who's a Rosh, who's antagonistic. Each one has to be dealt with according to their Hashkafa base, according to their entire philosophical understanding of what Torah is all about, and what Kodesh Baruch Hu is all about, and what Yitzias Mitzrayim represents. We have to gear our presentation that everybody participating in the Seder should benefit from our presentation, as when Mekayim the mitzvah of learning with him Talmud Torah on the highest level on the night of Pesach itself. We discussed the halachos involved in the mitzvahs halayla, and therefore we sing out the Pesach, the matzah, and marah. And not only do we basically discuss the halachos and the sipur and all the phenomena involved in the halachic phenomenon of the evening, and we give them instruction how much wine to drink and how much matzah to eat and how much marah to eat and everything else. We're giving instructions. When the Korban Pesach was in existence, we used to tell those who are participating how much meat they have to eat at the Korban Pesach. And when you eat these things in the middle of the meal, at the end of the meal. So all of this stuff I discussed last week, but this is part of the halachic dimensions of the Seder itself. We discussed Tamei HaMitzvos. What's the Hashkafa behind the Korban Pesach? What's the Hashkafa behind the Matzah? What's the Hashkafa behind the Marah? So we discuss Tamei Mitzvos on the night of Pesach, which gives even more substantive understanding of what these specific mitzvahs halayla represent, etc., etc. We discuss the historical narrative of the development of the Jewish people. We discuss the fact that we go back to the time of Avram Avinu from Terach and the history of the Jews from Avram up into the present. We discuss the concept of our avdos, the slavery we suffered in Mitzrayim, and how hard and difficult that specific avdos was, and the Haggadah darshans various parts of the Psukim of the Chumash, and explains how severe the punishment was and the torture of Klal Yisrael was during that period of time when we were asked to leave, and Paro, instead of being nice, tortured us more and more to make us really feel how subjugated we are to him, and etc., etc. The fact of the matter is there's a chiyuv for us to feel as if we're experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of Pesach. Chayva d'mliras atzmal, as if you basically left Mitzrayim. And on a certain Kabbalistic level, we are re-experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of Pesach. And therefore, certain halachas that apply to those who left Mitzrayim apply to us as well, especially singing a hallel, which we do on the night of Pesach, which is not a hallel, that's the formal hallel we recite on Kedushas Yom Tov of every other Yom Tov, but the hallel we sing on the night of Pesach at the Seder is called the hallel of Shira, a hallel that is sung by a person who just underwent a miraculous salvation, which you have a chiyuv of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracle he performed to save you, your family, your children, the whole Ganze Klal Yisrael from potential destruction. This is called the Halal of Shira, Yechayv on the Torah, love it to do such. It's a special type of Halal. Certain Halals apply to it that don't apply to Halal the rest of the years, as explained by the Ran and many of the Gedolei Achrayim who deal with this topic later on. But besides all of that, one of the most phenomenal things that are quite interesting about the Seder is that when you look at the text of the Haggadah, and we're dealing with Hashkafa and Halacha and history, we've got a lot of different things. There's one phenomenon of the Haggadah that sticks out very blatantly when you'll be rereading the Haggadah this coming Yom Tov. And that is, when you look at the time frame, there's more time spent on talking about the miracles of the Makos in Mitzrayim and the Makos that took place in the Kriyas Yamsuf. There's even a debate amongst Tanoim how many Makos, how many miraculous phenomena took place to punish the Egyptian Empire, and the numbers go from just 10. They're going more and more, higher and higher and higher and higher. If there were 10 in Mitzrayim, then there were 50 on the Yam. And the numbers then go into the hundreds, 200, 300. I mean, there are incredible amounts of actual Makos and sub-Makos that were thrown against the Egyptian Empire. And this is a very, very big theme that's really darshan and explained at length in the actual Haggadah itself. So I want to therefore explain to you tonight and this morning exactly why makos are so crucial, and why, in fact, because of this specific text of the whole history of Klal Yisrael, and going from Mitzrayim all the way, ultimately speaking, to the Midbar, Kabbalah Satara, and going to Eretz Yisrael. So the Sefer Chinuch says over here that what is the, what we call the essence of this specific Sheirosh HaMitzvah, when it comes to the mitzvah of CPC is Mitzrayim. So he says that the whole concept over here is, as we're soon going to see, that the purpose of Mitzrayim and the whole miraculous redemption is the Yesod Gadol, a tremendous foundation principle. Amit Chazak, a major pillar, B'Torosenu U'Menosenu, when it comes to our Torah's Hashkafos, when it comes to our belief system, our Ken Anu Omrim La'Olam, we always therefore mention as part of the themes of our Birchosenu, Tfilosenu, our brachas we recite and the prayers we recite, Zecher L'Yitzias Mitzrayim. All of this is a commemoration of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Fishu Lanu Os U'Mofes Gamor, B'Chidash Olam. As we're soon going to see, it's a total proof to the concept of the fact that the world was created something from nothing, Yesh Miayin, and that there's a Elokai Kadmon Chofetz V'Yachol, there is a God of antiquity, of eternity, that can do what he wants and has the capacities. Po'el Kol HaMitzvasu, he causes all that happens in this world to happen. B'Yadol HaShanosam, he has the ability to change them, change events historically, change things scientifically and natural law and such. Kefi sheyachpos, according to his desires. Because Mamin Asmanim, he's not limited by any type of time frame. B'she'asa b'mitzrayim b'she'shina tivei olam b'she'leinu. Hashem literally changed the entire natural law in his implementation of the actual Bria to perform the types of makos he inflicted upon the Egyptians. V'asalonu osos mechudashim gedolim v'atzumim. He gave us signs that are literally something of a new nature and great and powerful we never saw before. Haloza Meshasek, this experience of the history of what happened in Mitzrayim will literally keep quiet. Kol Kofer, whoever wants to reject the concept of Chidush Olam, that God created the universe, Umekayim Umunasoi B'Yediyas Hashem, it will allow us to further our belief in the divine providence of God. Ki Hashkachaso V'Yecholto B'Chlol Umperotim Kulam. God knows everything going on in this world in a general fashion and in a very, very specific fashion. So this is what the Sefer Chinuch says of why we spend so much time in Zechira Kol HaShana Kula and why we're marich upon this on the night of Pesach with CPC Yitzias Mitzrayim. What I want to do today, and the time I still have available, is to quote you in our Barbanel that's very beautiful that you can say over at the Seder, in which the Barbanel points out that what the Sefer Chinuch just said over here can be seen in the text of the Torah concerning the Makos, in the discussion that ensued between Moshe and Paro concerning the implementation of Yitzias Mitzrayim, how they reacted to it, and the big questions we always have to ask ourselves, and it's a very important question, if the Rabbeinu Shem wanted us to leave Mitzrayim and he wanted to pressure Paro, the ultimate makkah that pressured Paro on the most sophisticated, powerful level was which makkah? The makkah of Makkas Becheiros. If he wanted to force Paro's hand, he could have the easy capacity to push the Makkas Becheiros button immediately. Paro would have been in such a state of tumult as he was at the end. His son died, no matter how much he protected him, it meant nothing. Paro himself was the Becheiro and he felt that he was going to be imminently killed as well. This forced Paro's hand. He ran it to Moshe and Aaron and told them, I'm going to give in. You can go, you can leave, etc., etc., as quickly as you want. So why do we need the other 9 Makos? Why do we have to go through the whole tumult of all these Makos if the real definitive Maka that really pushed the button is Makos Becheiros? And why did God stretch out these Makos if he needed 10 over 12 months? What's the purpose of that? So I want to discuss that as well, to give you a good picture over here. And with that, at the Seder, you'll be able to give over a beautiful Dvar Torah, furthering the information that I'm mentioning over here in my presentation to you. So listen very carefully. When Moshe came at the Shlichus of God to let the Jewish people go, so he said, Kira ma Hashem, this is what Hashem said, Shalach es ami, send out my people, so that they can basically observe a special divine holiday for me in the Midbar itself. That's what the request from Paro was. Paro, in his indignant fashion, in his Baal Gaiva fashion, he himself thought he was a god in his own right. So he said to Moshe, Mi Hashem? Who is this god you're talking about? He's not listed in our official catalog of all the deities of gods that exist in the universe today. We didn't find his name there. So quite obviously he doesn't exist. Who is this God? And furthermore, he want me to listen to him as if God hears what I'm saying or cares what I'm doing. I mean, what are you talking about, divine providence? What are you, Paro says. Lo yadat yes Hashem, I'm making a statement to you, Moshe. I don't know this God, and since I don't know and recognize him or his powers, Gam es Yisrael HaShaleich, I give a total rebuttal and refusal to the request that was made. Under no conditions will I send out the Jewish people as he just requested. So Chazal tell us, if you look very carefully in what Paro basically said, in the expressions which he articulated, Chazal tell us that he was really kofer in 3 major concepts about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he said, who is God? He was kofer in the concept of Metzias Hashem, the existence of our God. That God even exists. He was a kofer be'ikar. It's a big, big problem. Asha Eshma Bakolo, that there's a God who hears our voices and communicates with us, and he knows what's going on here down below, that there's an Ayim Raya, Ezen Shemas, V'chol Masa B'sefer Nechtovim, he says, doesn't exist. And if that's the case, I don't believe in divine providence that you're telling me. I don't believe in a God that knows what's going on or cares what's going on down here. I'm not going to listen to what you're telling me on his behalf. And furthermore, I'm telling you without a question, since I reject the whole God and the knowledge of this type of God, I am definitely under no conditions going to send the Jews out, which meant he was not fearful of divine retribution. He had no knowledge of the omnipotence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Chozek, the strength that God possesses. He didn't believe in Schav Onesh, a reward and punishment. So Chazal say these 3 major yesodos, which are major tenets of our faith, of the existence of the God of Hashem, the only God in the universe, Akdus Hashem, the knowledge and Hashgacha Paratis of Hashem he was kofer in, and the omnipotence, the Echelas Hashem, the strength of God, Schav Einish, these are 3 major yesodos of Hashkafes Atera, not only applying to the Jews, but a non-Jew and his Shemesh Meinoach has to believe in these 3 things as well. And Paro, who was the leader of the most powerful nation on the face of this earth, that represented the greatest Chachmah in the world, all the technology, the science, the capacities they had, the biggest army on the face of this earth, everything that was powerful was contained in the superpower of Egypt, Therefore, Paro was the superpower leader of the universe at that point in time. And then, therefore, he even called himself a god. He deified himself, as other Goyish kings did throughout Jewish and world history itself. If that's the case, the Rabbeinu Shalom saw that he had to, before he exerts any type of punishment against the Egyptians or anybody else who of the world who disagrees with these major tenets of faith, you have to give them a little hasra, a little warning, some knowledge of what they're doing or what they're saying before you're able to punish them in an ethical, moral way, even though Goyim normally don't need hasra. But these theological, philosophical concepts of the Rabbeinu Shalom are not just do's and don'ts, but they have major, major conceptual, theological significance. So says the famous Briska Rav, and the Abarbanel agrees with what the Briska Rav said, that part of the Makos's purpose was to serve as an educational course in theology 1.1 of who the Rabbeinu Shalom is and his connection with the world and all the powers that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, his divine providence and all that he can do, and his unique existence is no god like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of this had to be taught to Egypt and proved to them. The Jews had to see it and witness it themselves. Up until now, it was in the Geder of Amunah. They heard this from their forefathers. Now they're going to witness B'yediyah with actually seeing, witnessing all these incredible powers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrated in front of their eyes. They're able to see it, witness it, and experience it. So the theology lesson was a course for an entire year. Each Makkah had a month devoted to it. And the Rabbeinu Shalom therefore gave them a year's time to experience the warnings given by Moshe and Hashem to them concerning this and that, and allow them, after they refused, to experience various makos, which were going to be part of the educational experience. If they learned their lesson, good. If they didn't learn their lesson, it not only served as an educational experience, it served as likewise a punishment, a mishpat against them for literally rejecting this learning, rejecting this specific and piece of information of knowledge of God, which they basically claimed they did not know or even recognize up until this very day. So therefore, it's a 12-month experience, educational / punitive. And that's why Hashem drew it out. When Hashem finished educating them, and therefore they can no longer say, we don't know, we're shaking, we basically have no idea what you're talking about, we never were taught anything. Once all the terutzim were taken away, the Rabbeinu Hashem finally pushed the ultimate button, the Makos Becheiros, and this was the ultimate pressure point to make Paro literally fall on his face and realize that he cannot escape the God of Israel, and that the God of Israel, not only does he exist and he knows what's going on, but he's more omnipotent, stronger than even the greatest empire in the face of this earth, the great Egyptian empire. And therefore, based upon that specific phenomenon, he pushed the Makos Becheiros, and because he pushed that button, and all the Becherim in Mitzrayim, including his own son, died. He ran around frantically looking for Moshe and Aaron and said to them, I give in. Shem Elokim, your God's the God. I can't fight with God. He's more powerful than me and my army and everybody else in our empire. Up until now, you will my avodim, the Medrash tells us, he said. From this point on, they're Avdi Hashem, they're servants of God. Go, leave the empire as you wished. Do it as quickly as possible. He wanted them to leave by night. Moshe says, we're going to leave based upon our time frame, not by yours. We're not going to leave as fugitives by night in the dark. We're going to have a parade tomorrow and go out of Egypt like victors of a war. taking the spoils of gold and silver and other precious objects of Egypt with us as we leave the defeated enemy and go out as a free people, as an aristocracy. We're going to have a very aristocratic meal the night before, which was the Korban Pesach. The Eidah B'Hesaber, as free men, as aristocratic men. And we're going to literally go out and show the world the Jews are a nation to their own, and they have the strength and capacity and the support of God to defeat any adversary on the face of this earth that opposes them and the will of God. This is what the old master plan was. But I want to go into the Makos because this is a very major Hashkafes Haggadah, which
you are
I think
listening
you should be
to
aware
benstorah.com.
If you look in the Haggadah, what you find is that in actuality, the Haggadah was written by a Chazal. It was put together over a period of time. Anshei Knesset HaGadol put the final stamp of approval upon it. And other Gadolim afterwards even added more stuff. And you find in part of the narrative that the 10 Makos are basically spelled out, but they're put in three different lines, three different columns. There's Dam, Tzvadei Yakinim. Then the next one has Orav, Devil, Ushchin. And the final column has Barod, Arbe, V'cheshech. And right underneath that you have the statement of Makos B'cheres. In fact, the Baal Haggadah says that why do we divide into three groups? So they quote the Tanna Rabbi Yehuda, who used to make simonim of how to write and discuss the Makos. And he's the one who coined the expression Detzach Adash Piachav, which is an acronym of all the Ten Makos. Each one of the letters of this acronym is the first letter of the Mako that, quite obviously speaking, was administered. Dalet for Dam, Tzadi for Tzvardeya, Chav because of Kinim. When it comes to Ayin, it's Orav, and Dalet is Dever, and Shin is Shchin. And Ba'achav stands for Barod, with the Beis, Arbe for Aleph, and Ches stands for Cheshek, and Beis stands for Makos B'cheres. So the three columns of these Makos being spelled out separately goes back to a Kabbalah we have from the initiators of writing the Haggadah and preparing the text the way it is to this very day. So the Abarbanel asked the obvious question, why did Rabbi Yehuda give this type of simon to do it this way, and why do we in fact do it? So the Abarbanel is mechadish the following beautiful chiddush I want to share with you this morning. He points out that if you look in the Chumash, before each and every triple administration of these Makos in 3 months, there is a basic preliminary statement where Hashem says, this is what I want to accomplish with this next set of 3 Makos. Before Dam Tzvadei Yakinim, it says, Bezos Teda, you will know, Ki Ani Hashem, that I am God. Says the Abarbanel, the first mission of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was to take away power of being Kofit B'Iker, claiming there's no such thing as the God of Israel, who's not on our official list. And after Dam Tzvadeya, and then finally Kinim was administered, the Chatume Paro, his great sages and magicians and great scientists, said to Paro, especially when it came to Kinim, there is a God of Israel. This Kinim Maka lies. We cannot recreate it. We can't duplicate it or replicate it like we tried to do with Dam and Tzvardeya. It therefore indicates Etzba Elokimi, there is a God of Israel. And if that's the case, your first statement of saying God doesn't exist for the Jews has been disproven, Paro. Whether you like it or not, there's a God of Israel we have to contend with. When he said, Mi Hashem, you now know there's a God. The next three groups, the next group of three different makos, Orav, Dever, Vishrin, Orav means mixed species of wild animals, Dever is pestilence, Shchin is boils, It says before the administration of these makos, Laman teida keni Hashem bekerev haaretz. Not only do I exist in the heaven above, but my essence, Hashem olaretz kevodu, His essence, His shechina, His divine powers are experienced throughout every expanse of the terrestrial world in which we live. God is not only in the celestial universe, God is in the terrestrial universe, Malach Aretz Kavod, as we say in our tefillahs. So what did Hashem do? He administered Makos in the second group, in which Hashem showed His divine providence of knowing who's a Jew and who's a non-Jew. The person who was a non-Jew experienced Argov, wild animals coming into their properties, hurting people, killing animals, causing tremendous damage. The Devamako, the pestilence, was a plague that plagued only the Egyptians and their families and their cattle. Shchin were boils that only plagued the Egyptians and their family. None of these three makos had any impact upon the Jewish neighbors who mamish lived next door to these Egyptians. You think the Egyptians didn't notice that? There has to be some divine providence and knowledge what's going on below to know that these makos only affect the goyim and don't affect the Jews. So these makos were basically to show Paro and the Egyptians there is divine providence. There is an ayin raya, a noizin shemas, who call maseh pesef nechtavim on the face of this earth. And if that's the case, this was a rejection of Paro and the world's thesis of the goyim, that God has presence below and knows who is who, and therefore be very careful in what you do and say, because God hears it, knows it, writes it down for future reference. The third group of makos, which are barad, arba v'cheshech, barad is hail, arba is grasshoppers, but is from all species around the world. Choshech was not just darkness, absence of light, but this choshech had such thickness that if a person in Egypt was standing when the choshech hit them, they couldn't sit down. It literally held them standing in place. That's how thick and heavy it was. And if an Egyptian was sitting in a chair and the makos choshech hit, he could not get up from the chair. It was really a darkness of amashos, never seen or experienced in the world up until this point in time. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show with this group is his preface by the statement in the Torah, Bavur Teda, Ki Ein Kamoni B'chol Aretz. With these makos, the Mitzrayim will realize there's no other divine entity that has my powerful omnipotence when it comes to doing what I want in this world with natural law on any level whatsoever. This was the purpose of Barad. Barad was the first type of divine missile ever created. The outside of the missile is made from frozen water, Barad hail. The interior of the missile had a fire burning, chemicals and such. When this came down, the Barad, as if they're receiving missiles, dangerous missiles from the heaven, the Barad, which was ice water, frozen, and the Eish coexisted, which ran against natural law. The God wanted to show that if I have to do what I have to do and send divine missiles, water and fire won't basically contradict or undermine each other. They'll coexist because I'm changing natural law to make these divine missiles. The Arba were grasshoppers from all over the world, every species that ever exists, species of grasshoppers that were never seen in the Mideast before, and they devastated all the various vegetation, wherever it was contained, any agricultural phenomenon that existed in Mitzrayim, and they did have a lot of agricultural resources, of monies that were basically paid for the agricultural produce. The whole industry was destroyed because of the Arba. And Choshech literally showed them that you no longer have the ability to stand and go any place or sit or go in any place. I can put you in a state of darkness, in divine solitary confinement, can't get in, can't get out. I can change natural law and do things that you never witnessed before in your life. This therefore demonstrated the concept of the omnipotence of God, the ischar va'onesh, the concept of reward and punishment, because when it came to these makos, it only bothered the Egyptians and their families and their homesteads and their properties. None of the Jews had any of these makos happen to them, even though they were living interspersed between their Egyptian neighbors. These bothered the Egyptians only, did not bother the Jews. So Paro saying, I'm not going to let them go. Would God do something to me? He definitely did something to them and show that all the things you basically were kofar in the existence of God, in the divine providence of God, and ultimately in the omnipotence of God, these three sets of makos, which took 9 months to implement, three different makos at the time, basically teaching the same principle over and over again, therefore was the official divine rebuttal of the kfira demonstrated by power representing the Gaiusha world at large. It taught them Yediyas Hashem, knowledge of God, on levels they never knew before. Even the Jews experienced firsthand with Yediyah what was known to them up and now based upon oral tradition, based upon Amun and believing their elders, the Bubbas, the Zaydas, and the older generations and their parents concerning who God is from what they knew from Torah history of the Jews up until that point in time. So this was Makos that according to the Haggadah had subcategories. It weren't just these Makos, but there were subcategories, subdivisions of these Makos. That's why it took a month to orchestrate each and every Makos. There was Hasra, and then there was the implementation of it. But ultimately speaking, when after the education and the online, on-the-spot punishment they received when they didn't want to listen, and these makos inflicted them, their bodies, of themselves, their wives, their children, the bodies of their cattle, their crops, when all of this was implemented and Paro was still unwilling to send them out, Hashem says, well, you're no longer ignorant of the facts about me. At this point in time, I'm going to push the major button that's going to turn you totally around. And he pushed the Makos Becharos button. As I mentioned before, as soon as that hit Mitzrayim at 12 o'clock at night, on the night of the 15th of Nisan, all of a sudden, Paro had a change of heart. He was fearful for losing his own life as a Bechar. Ran around the whole Egyptian neighborhoods. Where does Moshe live? Where does Aaron live? I have to speak to them. And when he finally met with them, he said, I'm willing to now acquiesce to listen to what God said. Of Shalach mi v'yechuvi l'bemidbar. Go. Up until now, they were my avodim. From this point down, they're now avodim of God, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as I pointed out, the Jews, upon hearing this, were in a state of celebration of Shira v'Hidot HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They also said the Hallel that night, thanking God for their salvation, for their redemption, for their freedom, for becoming the chosen nation of God, the Amanifcha v'Kadosh Baruch Hu, with God's divine protection surrounding them from all sides. But they only left by day of the 15th night at night, to demonstrate they're not leaving, as I mentioned before, as fugitives running away from prison, but as freedmen who were victors in a war against their oppressors, with gold and silver and jewelry, which they took from the Egyptian Empire. And they left with a parade to show the ultimate geula taking place in front of the eyes of the biggest superpower on the face of this earth. There's nothing they can do to stop it. And on the contrary, they gave them all different types of monetary objects to celebrate their military and political success. They became the Amanivchar, the Necherim, the aristocrats of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bonim atem l'Hashem elokeichem. So the Makos had tremendous power in pointing out who Hashem is in every level, as I mentioned before, when you reread the Sefer Chinuch, where he basically points this out, because it's a Nimrod in Mitzvah Chafalov, in the 21st Mitzvah of Sefer Chinuch, for those who want to look it up. That's the text I started off with. You'll now see how the Sefer Chinuch got all these sodas he had. He was replicating what the Abarbanel said and explaining the power of these Makos. They saw the Makos in Mitzrayim. They saw the Makos on Kriyas Yamsuf. They saw the Oysos and Moivsim of Mon in the Midbar. And Anania covered from all six sides, protecting them, leading them, allowing them to move quickly from place to place. They had a Beramayim, an endless water supply. All this is in the Schus of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, as Chazal point out. They witnessed miracle upon miracle. All the needs and necessities were taken care of in the Midbar setting. And ultimately, 49 days later on, the day 50, they were Mekabel the Torah at Har Sinai, as Moshe had promised them in the beginning of the Shlichus. Zerois, Kenoch, Shlachticha, Barziram, and Mitzrayim, Tavin, Elokim, Alahar, Hazer. He already told them that there's going to be a meeting with them and God on day 50 from their exodus from Egypt. And this is why the Makos, because of the theological significance they had in teaching us who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is and what he's capable of doing, what he's capable of knowing and capable of accomplishing, it's for us a Yisod and Muni B'tochen HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He could do anything he wants. He could even create something for nothing in the concept of Briya Sa'ilam, which represents that principle. The world exists. Hashem's Mechadish B'chol Yom Tomit Masa Bereshis. If he didn't want the world to exist another day, he could stop it. As the Rama says in his Yigam Yikaram, the world can exist with God, but God can exist without the world. So therefore, we saw all these hashkafas, the ideologies, the Yigam Yikaram, everything we wanted, we witnessed and personally experienced with Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's the Yisod of Amun and Bitochen, with the whole Sipur that we say in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why we sing so many shirs with Tishbachos to Hashem at that night, to show our recognition and praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Sheva Heida, what he did for Klal Yisrael, the Dayenu, how many miracles he performed for us, and if he did just one, it was Dayenu. But over and over again, this miracle and that miracle, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Dayenu. But now I want to give you one more interesting facet to keep in your mind to finish this year. One of the great Mukubalim of antiquity, who was called the Ari HaKadosh of Yitzhak Luria, he was the great Rebbe of all the great Mukubalim of Klal Yisrael, and he says, I want to show you something that Chazal say, and that is sometimes where the hearts and minds of the leaders of the leaders of the world, Lei Malachim Biyah Hashem. Hashem controls their minds, even puts in their mouth certain statements to say. Many times they say things they don't even realize the ultimate meaning of it. Nibo Layada Mashaniba, they sometimes have, say a prophetic statement, not really its prophetic significance. And says the Ari HaKadosh, I'm going to show you right now in this narrative where this comes true 100%. When Paro rejected Moshe's request of Shalach Ami Yechugili B'Midbar, what did he say? Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Kaylai. That's what he said. So Ari HaKadosh says, let me show you something. When he said, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Kaylai, Paro already had forecast his downfall. Why? Because he points out that the word that's put in the Chumash, the Asher, Mi Hashem, Asher, Eshma Bekolo, Asher has a gematria. The gematria of Asher is 501. He then points out, if you take the Tzach Adash Be'achav, and you turn the Hebrew letters into their numerical value, all the Tamakos add up also to the number of 501. The word Asher therefore represents the implementation of the Ten Makos against the Egyptian Empire. Now, based upon this, says the Ari HaKadosh, the following statement, which is really magnificent and beautiful. He said that when Paro says, Mi Hashem, who is God, rejecting God and all of his ramifications, when he said Asher, he was saying, because he thought he was giving now the reason for what he's rejecting God. Says the Ari, the Asher is a remez to the Eser Makos. And if that's the case, where he said, Mi Hashem, who is Kofan HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he then said Asher, which represents the Ten Makos, and you separate into units, what's the next expression? Eshma Bekola, which means after he experiences the Ten Makos, I will listen to God and fulfill his desire. So in his statement of Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bekola, he was already misnabo without even realizing it. That his total rejection of the request by Hashem through Moshe is going to be changed. He's going to change his mind and ultimately acquiesce to do what Hashem requested. Vidati Hashem, that Tzela Shaleach was literally mavutal in his prefatory statement, which he didn't even understand the significance of what he was saying. Hakor Rumuz Baraisa, everything's contained in the Torah, whether explicitly or implicitly with Ramazim, Kabbalistically. This is the power, this is the koich of the Eser Makos. The Hashkafa that we have in Hashem was demonstrated by it. We literally repeat it every year in the Haggadah to show how Hashem functions and how we connect to Hashem and what Hashem can do when it comes to the world around us. Change natural law for the sake of the survival and the success of the Jewish people, Rabbi Miad Miyatim, we saw in later generations. Nobody can oppose us, nobody can eliminate us. The promises of the Brisbane HaBesarim are indestructible. We live Shalei B'Derech HaTeva, and whether the Goyim like it or not, we're going to inherit Eretz Israel. All of this we see, we witness, and we experience as we read the narrative of the Haggadah. That's why the Haggadah is so important. That's why the end of the Pesach is so pivotal in Hashkafas Yehadus. Zeich L'Yitzis Mitzrayim is mentioned in our Tfilos and Brachos. You mentioned the Kol Hashana Kula, Tamidim and Tamidos. You now have the essence of the power of Haggadah, the power behind Tzipi Yitzis Mitzrayim. I want to wish you all a wonderful Simchas Yom Tov, Samach Tov Yechagecha. And we should be zocha that with our doing all that we have to do to conduct the Seder with all the mitzvahs halayla, everything we do, we should be zocha to the ultimate redemption, the shana bav Yerushalayim habanuy, as we say in the Haggadah itself. Next year we should have the real redemption with the full redemption of returning to Eretz Israel, rebuilding a Beis HaMikdash, and having the ability to bring the actual Karban Pesach once again, and to be able to have the ultimate redemption of the Jews, as is promised by Hashem in the Torah and then reiterated in the Nach literature. We should have the ability to see this happen. The Tfilos of the great Tzadikim, Sidkanios of Klal Yisrael, should come to fruition. The Heilige Rav Chaim Zecher Tzadik Gevracha, the Tzadik, the Sar HaTeira in Shemayim, should be mispal in front of the Kisa HaKavet Dayenu Rabbeinu Shalom. Let's redeem Klai Sa'unzer HaKindalach. You see the chiluk between the Jews and the rest of the world. We are Am HaNivka, with the Am Segula, with Am HaTeira. We should hope and pray that the Tfilos of our Tzadikim in Shemayim, the Tzadikim down here, with our own Tfilos joined with them, should therefore usher in the Haftacha, the Shana Bav Yishlam HaBenuya, and Bis Mashiach Zedkein Amein V'Amein.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.